S2on minus 1 cross S1. Okay, it's a complex manifold, of course, and it's topologically this manifold. Well, why is that? To see that, we should think about a fundamental domain. So the fundamental domain is where make sure I can get it right. Is kind of between the spheres sum Zi squared is equal to 1 and sum Qi Zi squared is equal to 1. Okay, so this is an ordinary sphere. Since the Qi's are smaller than 1, this sphere is bigger, strictly bigger, and contains this one. This is some kind of squashed sphere. So here we have some ordinary sphere. And over here, we have some kind of squished sphere. And this one is inside this one. And the region between them is the fundamental domain for this action. So when I take the quotient, I'm going to identify the inner boundary with the outer boundary by this map. And once I identify the inner boundary with the outer boundary, I'm left with S2n minus 1 times the circle, which goes from there to there. So what is the supersymmetric index? It's just the partition function on this manifold. Is equal to the partition function on this manifold. Okay.
Can you ask in what sense the diagonal matrix is in UN?
It's not. That's a good point. It's in S. It's in. Okay, sorry, got confused by something. This is still the condition, though, that. There is something you can do with orthosymmetry which allows you to send your theory to this manifold. I haven't said it quite right. My apologies. Sorry for the confusion. So we can, under some assumptions. Twist the theory so that it can be put in this manifold. With supersymmetry. Okay. So last time we argued that we wrote out a formula in terms of counting local operators. Why is that the partition function on this manifold? Well, the reason is so the manifold looks like it's take one sphere and another sphere and we glue them together. So to construct the partition function on such a thing, we should first figure out what the Hilbert space is of these guys, and then figure out what this map does to it. So if we assume we have a CFT then the Hilbert space on the 2n minus 1 manifold is equal to the space of local operators. The map induced by this Gaborism that is given by how the local operators transform when we hit them with these rotations. By applying to the local operators. It follows that the partition function on S1 times S to the 1 minus 1 should be equal to the trace of the operator of this operator, the trace in the space of local operators, this matrix. Okay. And this is the quantity last time we computed the local operators, figured out how they act under GL2, took the trace of this element of the Cartan of GL2, and we found a formula. We call that the index. This is the interpretation of the index as the partition function of something. So there's lots of fun to be had with supersymmetry indices. Kayon is an expert on all this stuff.
Yeah,
so clarify this point. So this is related to what Ian was asking. So if these have absolute value 1, this is just a rotation. But once we've taken the holomorphic twist, the group UN analytically extends to the group GLN. So there's some action, it's just some polynomial action, right? Operators have some number of Z1 derivatives, some number of Z2 derivatives, and it says Q1 to the K if it has K Z1 derivatives. That kind of thing. It's a very simple thing. So yeah, that's all it is. I think if I should do another example. Well, maybe I won't do an example now, and we can do more examples later as we understand more general field theories. Maybe we can try to do the index of n equals 4 gauge theory by the end of the lecture. Okay, so far we've understood how to describe various twists of supersymmetric gauge theories in terms of some holomorphic language. And one thing I really want people to understand is, we saw Davide's talk where he did some manipulations to a supersymmetric field theory and produced holomorphic things like the beta gamma system, which involves a D-bar operator. So I want people to be able to do those computations. However, things get slightly annoying because turns out there's a profusion of fields and the action function gets a little complicated once we do more complicated examples. So I wanted to introduce some algebraic concepts which will help us keep all that stuff organized in a simple way. And this is probably familiar to lots of people already. So I'll start with an example of Chern-Simons theory. So this is a example that should be familiar to everybody. So the fundamental field is a connection on some three-manifold. And the action functional is the Trin-Simons action functional, where this is half ADA plus 1 over sixth A. So I want to write this. We're going to write this in the BV formalism. The BV formalism is just a slick way of doing quantization, which incorporates the ghosts, which enforce gauge symmetry, and also some antifields, which enforce the equations in motion. I don't want to get into too much detail about the philosophy, so I'll just tell you the answer in this case. So in the BV formalism, the fields will be a graded vector space . So in degree zero, we have what we started with, the original fields. In degree minus one, we have zero forms, and these are ghosts, because the gauge transformations are generated by zero forms. So these are related to gauge symmetry. In degree one, we have antifields. These are dual to these fields. In degree two, here we have what you could call anti-ghosts, or the antifields of the ghosts. These three forms are dual to the zero forms. So, you know, in general, if you give me a field theory with a Lagrangian and some gauge symmetry, there's some algorithm which pops out some bigger space, which it's convenient to work with for the purposes of quantization. But it turns out this algorithm produces for something really nice in this case. It just produced the whole Durham complex. So in other words, fields, the full space of fields, is the whole Durham complex, or the Durham space of the manifold M, with a shift by one. And this symbol means we shift so that omega 1 is in degree 0. Now, in the BV formalism, there's a nice way to summarize not only the action in the original space of fields, but the way the gauge symmetry acts in the original fields and things like that, in terms of a single action functional which depends on this bigger space. But the nice thing is that this action functional just has the same form as what the BV formalism is just the same. But where it takes a little bit of caution in interpreting this, because A is a form of mixed degree. For example, you could expand A as a sum A3, and then you could expand this action, you will find the original Trin-Simons action applied to A1, which is a one-form component. And there's going to be other terms. There'll be a term like, let's see, dA0 A2 plus half A0, A0, A2, and so on. Going to be A3. Yeah. So writing it like this is just kind of a slick way of summarizing all the terms you get by expanding. Okay, so what this suggests is that this suggests something which is actually, I suppose, introduced by AKSE's Alexandrov, Konsevich, Schwartz, Zabranovsky, is another way to think about how you might construct a field theory, or where you might get one. Normally, you would get a field theory by saying, here are my fields, here's my gauge symmetry, here's my Lagrangian. But here, we could have equally well said, oh, look, this Hölder-Ramm complex is such a natural thing. Let's just take this Hölder-Ramm complex, tensor it with the Lie algebra, and build our action from that. And we would end up getting the same answer. So let's see what kind of thing do we need to be able to produce a field theory in the second way. Suppose we have the following data. So if G is a Lie algebra with an invariant pairing, say curly A is a differential graded commutative algebra, so for example, A, this curly A might be forms on a manifold, or A might be the Dalbo complex of X, if X is a complex manifold. Then we also need, suppose we have an odd map, which I'll call integration, from A to C, which is a cochain map. From this data, we can construct a field theory which looks just like this one. What do we do? I take A, tensored in my Lie algebra, and I write down the Trin-Simons form. Because if you think about it, what did we need to write down this Trin-Simons form? We needed to know how to take the Lie bracket, and we needed to know how to take the wedge product, and how to do the Durham operator, and how to integrate. And these are the things we said we had. We have a commutative product, it's like the wedge product, we have a differential, we have an integration map, and we have a Lie algebra. So then there's an action functional. On A tensor G, which is S of alpha, it's just the same form you wrote before, where integration is understood in terms of this map. Take the invariant pairing on G plus 1/6, and there's a cohomological shift by 1. Okay. So I know the math people are super familiar with this, but at least the homological math people. But it may seem a little strange to some physics people. Any questions?
No?
Well, it's zero on things which are not top forms. So by saying odd, I mean it's zero on the even piece in particular. I suppose I should remark that this kind of, something almost identical to this was studied long ago by Witten, except he didn't have commutative, which means the only Lie algebras you could put in is GLN. In what Witten studied, this arose from A would be the space of open string states. The differential would be the BRST operator. The product is some kind of OPE of open string states. This field theory you get is the open string field theory. So So a version of this is pretty well known in some sectors of the physics literature. Okay, so the reason I wanted to introduce this is that writing down these algebras is often much easier. You know, in this case, it wasn't. In this case, writing down the action and the gauge symmetry was not so bad. But in other cases, there might be some algebra which is really natural. But then to write down the action and the gauge symmetry, you pick out some little pieces of it, and it becomes a bit messier. And this is just easier to describe. In fact, there are some cases where you can't, where it's not, at least I don't know a natural way to describe them except by using this whole algebra. So let's write down some examples of field theory you construct this way. So here's an example. On Cn, and odd, I can take A to be the compactly supported double complex. And the integration map from A to C sends alpha to the integral of alpha wedge dz1 wedge dzn. So we choose a holomorphic volume form. And this way, you will produce a field theory. In the case of three dimensions, it's holomorphic Trans-Simons theory. This again was also introduced by Witten, who realized it lived in the topological B model. For n odd in more general, it's just some general, more general version of holomorphic Trans-Simons. Questions are used?
No, we're having an unrelated conversation.
Of course. Get out of this classroom, you. So what else can we do? We can take in, of course, we have already seen how we can take three real directions and produce a field theory, it's Trans-Simons. Of course, we can also take an odd number of real directions. But more generally, we can put them together. We can take an odd number, we can take some number of real, some number of complex. As long as the sum is odd, we get a theory. So on R to the K times C to the L, where K plus L is odd, we can take A to B to the RAM complex, and RK tensor the Dalbo complex on CL. So this just looks like functions on all K times CL. And then I adjoin dx1, dxk, dz bar 1, dz bar L. The differential here, I forgot to say the differential is a Dalbo operator. Call this d sub a is the Durham operator in x, so it's some dxi, d by dxi, plus some, and the d bar operator in the other directions, dz bar I, d by dz bar I. And the integration map, the integral sends alpha to the integral over R k times cl, alpha wedge z1 wedge dzl. Okay, this is really fun. Actually, here's This example appears a lot. It appears in some twists of n equals 2 gauge theories. It appears in twists of in four dimensions. It appears in twist a certain twist of one comma one gauge theory in six dimensions, or the seven dimensional supersymmetric gauge theory too. So this kind of thing appears all the time, actually. Here's an example which is close to my heart, is that if k is 2 and l is 1, this is the theory I studied, which is related to the Yangian. So the final way of generalizing this is, as well as, what else can I do? I can have real directions, I can have complex directions, I can have super directions too. That's one more generalization. And if once we have all real, complex, and super, we'll find we can describe pretty much any field theory that arises in string theory in this language in a very compact way. So I can take or k times cl times c0 slash m, where k plus l plus m is odd. And then I can take a to be just the same kind of thing as before. Take functions on or k times cl, then I adjoin dxi, dz bar j, and epsilon, say, or. D sub A is, as before, the Dirac operator on RK plus the D bar operator on CL. And the integration map sends alpha to the integral RK times C0 slash M and alpha DZ1 CL D epsilon 1 D epsilon M. Okay, so if people are not familiar with Berezin integration, this Berezin integration, all it does is pick out the coefficient of epsilon 1 times epsilon m. So this integral just picks out What do you mean?
I want to know how much, the volume form on RK, there's not many choices. I think there's two. There's a sort of one parameter choice on the volume form on RK.
Mm-hmm.
How many volume forms on C?
There's a one complex parameter.
And that's it?
If you want to be invariant under a copy of SU, okay. SUL. Of course, you can do something more general. You can allow it to have poles or whatever. There's more. But just on flat space and varying under SU, SUL really fixes it almost uniquely. Well, also translation invariant, yeah.
So I didn't know that you wanted the translation invariant.
Right. I should have specified it. Yeah. It has to be a holomorphic volume form. So. In general, if we're going to do this more globally, there's a more global version which is fun and might be familiar to people who study 3 n equals 2 theories. What's the global thing that looks like this? So if something looks like these two directions, it's a manifold of dimension k plus l with a certain foliation of dimension, sorry, manifold of dimension k plus 2l with a foliation of dimension, complex foliation of dimension k plus l, some kind of transverse holomorphic structure. These things often arise in 3D n equals 2 theories, for example, in which case k would be 1 and l would be 1. You're looking at three manifolds, foliation or the transverse to the foliation of a complex structure. That's the kind of global structure you need to define this. I should head off in a minute to pick up the kids, but okay, so I really want to just introduce this to have a nice language so that we can move forward and not, you know, end up writing in pages of formulas. So let me give you two examples, which are kind of nice, of to also maybe explain how to do dimensional reduction. So one thing we didn't describe was what the twist of n equals 1 gauge theory in 10 dimensions is. And this was computed by Laurent Poulliou, but I didn't give you the full answer because in the language we had before, it was a bit complicated. So this language is very easy. It's just holomorphic transimons on C5, or more generally, our X, Clavier fivefold. So that the fields are the Dalbois complex of C5, tensor G with a shift of 1. And it has this transimons action we were writing down. Okay, so dimensional reduction. If we dimensionally reduce along any complex direction, along C, then the Dalbois complex of C, you know, when we dimensionally reduce, we just take the translation invariant fields. This becomes just C adjoined dz bar, where dz bar is odd. So you see that dimensional reduction replaces C by C0/1. Okay, so now we know, great, so now we know what happens in 10 dimensions for the maximally supersymmetric gauge theory. We immediately get a description of all maximally supersymmetric gauge theories in every even dimension. So in even dimensions, even real dimensions, maximally supersymmetric gauge theory is, after twisting, holomorphic transimons on the supermanifold C to the n cross C to the 0/5 - n. So for example, if n equals 2, we find that 4-dimensional n equals 4 is this holomorphic transimons on C2/3. So I really should go, but she's a bit short today. But this is fun, and we can have lots of fun with this example, maybe do some computations next time. There are papers in the literature. There's a paper of Zi Yin, where he uses this description of 3D n equals 4D n equals 4 theory to compute the algebra of local operators and do some kind of fun computer algebra checks, or holography. Nice features. There's an SU3, which rotates these three directions. That's SU3 inside the SU4 orthosymmetry group. There's extra supersymmetries, which survive the twisting process. They're realized as just symmetries of this supercomplex manifold. This is an open subset. This is an open subset of P2/3, which has as symmetry group PSU3/3. It's famously a PSU4/4 symmetry group of n equals 4 Young-Mills. This is the subgroup of that survives the twisting in Ax. These three odd directions will be related. You know, if I write n equals 4 theory in n equals 1 language, it has three n equals 1 chiral multiplets. These are that three those three guys will be those three n equals one chiral multiplets. Anyway, we'll discuss more about this example next time in the decent computations of the index.